Last week we began the sugya of what's considered to be erva, primarily for the purposes of kriya shma and tefila and the Torah and the kedusha. And the Torah tells us that yer b'chayav azdava, one is not permitted to say words of kedusha in the presence of erva. Just as a little bit of a follow from last week, that is, it only applies to dibur. It doesn't apply to hiror. It means if a person wants to think in divrei Torah, so that would be okay, even in the presence of something that's not appropriate. But in terms of actually saying the words, so that would be a problem. So that particular lacuna may not have been clear last week. But as we mentioned at the end of the show last week, that really everything that we spoke about last week is in a certain sense introduction to what we talk about now. Maybe the Gemara gave us certain guidelines, what's considered to be erva for those purposes. We spoke about tefach misha erva, we spoke a little bit about shok, about seya, kol, things of that nature. But we didn't really define a lot of these terms. We didn't really define what constitutes shok misha erva, what constitutes seya misha erva, what constitutes kol misha erva. So we're going to try to do that a little bit more today. Though there is a certain relationship between the halachas concerning kriya shma and what the standards of dress should be, there may be certain nuances of difference between them, but for the most part, whatever is not appropriate for the purpose of kriya shma is by definition not appropriate to be that way in the first place. So as we go on, we'll try to point out some of the possible differences between kriya shma and the general guidelines of tzniyus, but many things that we're going to say are going to be the same. So if we define something as shok vis-a-vis kriya shma, it's understood that a woman is not allowed to dress in such a way. If we define seir as something for kriya shma, it's understood that a woman is not permitted to dress in that way. So let's begin with the first category that the Gemara singled out, and that's the category of shok v'isha erba. So we pointed out last week that the Gemara mentions that shok v'isha erba immediately following the discussion of tefach v'isha erba, which led us to believe, and it's not only us, it's led the Mishnah Berurah to believe, that the din of shok v'isha erba is fundamentally different than tefach v'isha erba, whereas tefach v'isha erba is a certain degree subjective, and we said it depends on the time and place. So if you're in Saudi Arabia, so tefach v'isha erba is different than if you're in Teaneck. When it comes to shok v'isha erba, the simple reading of the Gemara is that there's no distinction. That shok v'isha erba is an objective shiur, is an objective statement of what counts as arayas b'chol makom b'chol zman. This is clearly the approach of the Mishnah Berurah. There are all those who disagree, to be intellectually honest. But we're going to work, at least for now, that there is some real objective statement in Chazal, shok v'isha erba, really behooves us to define what exactly is that, both for kriya shma as well as for what a woman would not be permitted to expose. So the Mishnah Berurah, and we continue on the ninth of the Ramakamash. So the Mishnah Berurah in Siman Ayin Hei in Sukkot and Beis. So the Mishnah Berurah points out this distinction that we just mentioned between tefach in contrast to shok. So says the Mishnah Berurah, "Vapaneh v'yadeh kefi minhag shederech v'yos megula v'yos hamakom." So he says the hands and the face; those are all talmid minhag hamakom. V'chein says the Mishnah Berurah, "Beparshas regel ad hashok," and similarly the lower part of the leg until the shok, that's all considered to be subjective erva, depending on what the dinig ha-makom is. And now in the bracket, the Mishnah Berurah commits himself to what exactly that means. The u'ad ha-makom shenikra, in case you don't know what the Yiddish word is, k'ni, v'loshen Ashkenaz. So he says, this means until the point of the knee, that's considered to be not yet the shok, says the Mishnah Berurah. So anything from the bottom of the foot until the knee is not halakhically considered to be the shok, according to the Mishnah Berurah. The makom shadat and lelech yachet mutal because kenegdan. So he says, in a place where women are walking barefoot, or women in a place where women don't have the bottom part of the leg covered, so that's not considered to be an objective erva. Shekevin shirakov behen ein abalde hiror. So since people normally walk that way in those places, so that's not considered to be a makom hiror, and therefore it would be permitted to say kriya shma. The obvious statement would be that if the minhag ha-makom is to walk that way, then it's permitted to walk that way, because that's not an objective erva. But if the minhag in that particular place is to cover that part, so then it takes on the status of the tefach v'isha erva, and then of course the halacha is it should be covered, and one who cannot say kriya shma in front of it if it's not covered. But says the Mishnah Baal Zerah Oseh, we didn't even mention the Zerah yet, we'll get to that a little bit later. Zerah Oseh, v'shoka, filo regilin lech megula kederach ha-prutzos, the Mishnah Baal just throws in a good line of Musar. Also, the Mishnah Baal says that, but something which is shok, so that doesn't matter what the minig is. With the minig, the whole world can walk away around that way, says the Mishnah Baal, that's objective error. So, mashallah davadam, the Mishnah Baal would say, obviously, the whole minig island is people walk around undressed, that there are certain halachic objective erbas, and that's considered to be one of them, the shok. So this Mishnah Berurah not only has described for us the difference between an objective Erev and a subjective Erev, he's finally given us some point of reference. He's finally given us lemaisa, what the words mean. So the Mishnah Berurah, that little bracket, told us that until the knee is the cutoff point. Everything below the knee, according to the Mishnah Berurah, is subjective Erev. It's totally unbinding and machom. Anything above the knee is considered to be objective Erev, which under all circumstances has to be covered, and under no circumstances to one take Kriyat Shema in front of. So this is the understanding of the Mishnah Berurah. Of course, the Mishnah Berurah left one small nekuda unclear. He didn't tell you what the knee itself is. Like the first sugya in the fourth paragraph of Brachos, ad b'chal, ad hor b'chal. Mishnah Berurah is not clear whether the knee is considered, the knee itself is considered to be below, that's considered to be subjective and totally in the minhag ha'malchum, or that's considered to be objective, and that's shof mamish. That's a little bit unclear from the Mishnah Berurah. But the one thing that is clear from the Mishnah Berurah is that anything below the knee, we call it calf, so the calf, the ankle, that whole area is not objective erva according to the Pesach of the Mishnah Berurah. So this kula of the Mishnah Berurah is a serious point of controversy. If you take a look on the, it goes a little bit out of order in terms of the Maamar Makomos because we skipped to the Chazanish. So the Chazanish in Maamar Makom 18, so if you look towards the bottom, the first little line is Tfei. So says the Chazanish in Simin Chavda, in Oschest there, says the Chazanish, first one wanted to say the high shok, nira du perak hatachton, ve'akuva akaf ha'okev. Says the Chazanish, he thinks that Mishnah Berurah is not correct in his description of shok. He says that he thinks that the dictionary definition of the word shok means the bottom part of the leg, from the knee, akuva means the knee, akaf ha'okev, until the heel, is what we call the calf. So whereas according to the Mishnah Berurah, the shok was referring to what we would call the thigh, the Chazanish is saying that's not true. That the real shok, the halachic shok, the objective shok, is considered to be the calf. How about min ha'akuva l'ma'ala? Says the Chazanish, what are you telling me? That you need a gemara to tell me that you have to cover above your knee? They said, that's ridiculous, says the Chazanish. Who tsanu behechlet? He says, every Tom, Dick, and Harry can realize that you have to be covered. Says the Chazanish, that the Gemara doesn't tell us other parts of the body. The Gemara doesn't say that the stomach of the woman has to be uncovered. The Gemara doesn't say that the chest area has to be covered. The Gemara doesn't have to bother telling us that. That's Dvarim HaMuvonim Eilav, says the Chazanish. That's understood. The Chiddush of the Gemara is, even those parts of the body which are Mechudash. Tata Seyev Yishayev, that's a Bechiddush. Kol Yishayev, that's a Bechiddush. Shok Yishayev, that's a Bechiddush. Says the Chazanish, it appears to him that the top part of the leg, the thigh, is nothing to talk about. You don't even need a Gemara to bother telling us that that has to be covered. That's considered to be Erev. That's a double portion. The Chiddush of the Gemara is the bottom part of the leg, namely the calf. So, and then he quotes other possible rayas, but he says the double portion to him at the end, that at least this part of it, at the very, very end, after the part that I cut off, so he throws a little bit of a pickbook into this, into his understanding. But the basic thrust of the Chazanish seems to be against the Mishnah Berurah. So now, we already have a major machlokes, the Gedalia Paiskin, the Mishnah Berurah, the Chazanish. What is the shok? Assuming for now, our assumption we've been working with last week and this week, which is again, not everyone agrees to, but we're going to work with the assumption that the shok is an objective erev, and nothing in the world is going to change the status of the shok, according to the Mishnah Berurah understands. But the Mishnah Berurah is willing to be makel that objective erev is only from the knee up. Maybe the knee included, maybe no, can't tell. But from the knee down, so that's not considered to be objective erev according to the Mishnah Berurah. And according to the Chazanish, even from the knee down, it's considered to be objective erev. L'chora, one who would want to be machmir for the Chazanish, so one would have to take something into consideration we mentioned last week. We mentioned last week that whenever you have erev, so erev b'ashashis is also, the Moshe B'Feirish, that in contrast to tsoa, so let's say you have a dirty diaper and you cover over it, you throw something on top of it, so that's not a problem of saying kriyashma, because assuming that it doesn't smell, because tsoa b'kishi talarachamana. As long as it's covered, that solves the problem. Same thing when it comes to erva, so covering doesn't help if the covering is transparent. The Gemara says if you have erva in front of it, and there's a glass in front of the erva, so it's lamala v'lamed, it doesn't help if you're able to see right through, so the erva is still considered to be magula, because erva b'ri'iyah talarachamana. So the Korah, for the Chara, no matter what your standard of Erva is, whether you define Shok with Mishnah Berurah or the Chazanish, it's not enough that the area be covered. Let's say it's covered with something which is transparent, it's covered with something which is sheer, you can see right through it, so that's not called covered for the purposes of Erva, that's called covered for the purposes of Tzoa, that's not called covered for the purposes of Erva. So the Chara, whatever your definition of Shok is, then it has to be covered in a way that Mamish, nobody can see through it. So now you have to reevaluate the Machlokes Mishnah with the Chazanish. If you hold like the Mishnah Berurah, so then technically speaking, let's say a woman wants to wear stockings that are see-through stockings, So according to the Mishnah Berurah, even though you could see through to the calf, it doesn't matter according to Mishnah Berurah. You don't even have to wear the stockings according to the Mishnah Berurah, because the bottom part of the leg, the calf, anything below the knee is not called an erev, it's not called shelf, it's only totally a minigam malkum. Depends on what the minigam malkum is. If you're in Bnei Brak, so then you have to cover it. You're in Geul, you have to cover it. You're in other places, so maybe you don't have to cover it. So according to the Mishnah Berurah, of course it's mutter to wear see-through stockings, because it's mutter to wear no stockings according to the Mishnah Berurah. But according to the Chazon Ish, who says that the bottom part of the leg under the knee is erev mamish, that's the shoke the Chazal are referring to. So then the corollary of that Chazon Ish is that if you want to cover that, then you have to wear stockings that can't be see-through. So then you have to be black, you know, like certain communities. So lechur, they have to be at least opaque enough. Was that the correct word? Right? Have to be at least not see-through. Leave it at that. According to the understanding of the Chazon Ish. That would be Paschim Halacha, like the Mishnah Berurah, the Chaznish. Depends where you are. So there are different opinions about this in the later communities. So again, those who wanted to follow the Mishnah Berurah, it's hard for me to come down hard against the Mishnah Berurah. But there are, again, not going to be Bachriya and the Shad with the Mishnah Berurah and the Chaznish, but that Achakir Bermiza, that Chaznish is not so bad to follow the opinion of the Chaznish. One thing is partial from this discussion is that even according to the Mishnah Berurah, it turns out this sugya to be the biggest makil. Even the Mishnah Berurah, the shulchan of the Ofer, is never going to be makil anything above the knee. And we weren't sure whether the knee itself is on the borderline, but anything above the knee, that's not even in the ballpark. That wasn't even a suffix according to Mishnah Berurah. That's the shulchan to be shaykh. According to the Chazish, that's not even shaykh. That's like the rest of the body that Chazal didn't even bother discussing. But even the Mishnah Berurah is the biggest makel, so anything above the knee is clearly out of the question. There's some things that are intuitively obvious and don't have to be said, but sometimes they have to be said anyway. So one of the things that has to be said is that this halacha, that everything above the knee has to be covered, obviously there's no chiluk whatsoever whether the person is standing or sitting. It means obviously the person has to dress accordingly, that even in any position possible that they find themselves, so all the appropriate parts are going to be covered. So to have an idea that the knee is covered in a certain position, but in another position it's not, so that's clearly not acceptable according to anybody. Even the Mishnah Berurah, the biggest maker on this sugya, clearly wouldn't accept such a thing. So that's the first quote-unquote objective erva that we're talking about, assuming that we're correct, that that's considered to be actually an objective erva. Machlokes is the Mishnah Berurah and the Chazon Ish. We move on to the next list of ervas, and the truth is that we bumped into something that didn't really appear in our sugya altogether. We saw it in passing in the Mishnah Berurah. Mishnah Berurah threw out a line about Zeroa Seha. So notice the Gemara never said a word about Zeroa, at least the Gemara in Brachas. The Gemara spoke about Tefach, the Gemara spoke about Shok, the Gemara spoke about Seir, the Gemara spoke about Kol. Those are the four things that were mentioned. And Zeroa, her arms, was never mentioned. So where in the world did the Mishnah Berurah get this idea from that Zeroa is a problem? So the Mishnah Berurah got this from the Sugi Masachas Ksubis. The Gemara in Ksubis is quite clear that that's a problem. The Mishnah Ksubis speaks about different things that a woman may do, which are considered to be breaches of tzniyos, and some breaches of tzniyos are very, very serious, that they can even throw into question whether the couple should remain married, assuming that the husband is a tzanua. That's what the Rav Moshe writes in the Tshuva. So sometimes you have a situation, a couple gets married, and the husband's perfectly okay with his wife walking around not appropriately. Then 20 years later, all of a sudden, he becomes a little bit more mockery than it's been. So he comes to his wife, and he says, okay, that's it, you're not acting appropriately, and the Mishnah says, those are grounds for divorce, I'm not going to give you a ksuba. So Moshe, that's a joke. Moshe says, when you got married, you were living according to a certain standard, so because you became frumer, that's wonderful, I hope your wife will also start to be more mockery than mitzvahs. But you can't turn around and take your wife to the entire over it. When the Mishnah says that if the wife is not acting accordingly, so those are grounds for the husband to take her to a Din Torah, that means they got married with certain standards. She was acting accordingly. He understood that she's marrying someone who's a tznua. And then 20 years later, she decides to dress inappropriately. That's takatina. Then the husband has a shtakatina against his wife. But if when they got married, so they were both in the same different standards. So Baruch Hashem, the husband's growing. Hopefully the wife will also grow, but the husband can't turn around and scream at his wife. You can never scream at your wife, but you can't scream at your wife over this because there was no mekach tos yet. I mean, she got married, then you got married using different standards. But the Mishnah says that we see that the wife goes a little bit off the derech. When she got married, she was acting, she was dressing appropriately, and then she starts to dress inappropriately. So one of the examples that the Gemara gives of what's considered to be inappropriate is Magala's Rosel, that she's exposing her arms. That's a Lashon HaGemara. That's considered to be inappropriate dress. That's considered to be a lack of tzniyus of dress. So what exactly does that phrase mean, Rosel? So we know what the word Zeroah means. We know from Luchos Tefillin what Zeroah means. The Gemara says you put the Tefillin on the Zeroah. So we know you don't put Tefillin over here. You don't put Tefillin over here. So Tefillin over here. So that's considered to be the Zeroah. The Makom HaNuchos Tefillin. L'chora, what it means is that that limb from the elbow to the shoulder, that's considered to be a Makom HaZeroah. So that whole area has to be covered. And if that area is not covered, so that may run into problems in terms of a Hilchos Kriya Shema as well. Here the Chaznish just points out an interesting ha'ara on himself. He says that if you think about it from the biological point of view, so the arms and the legs, so the, you know, I guess, a little bit of a relationship, so this part of your hand is like, you know, the parallel to where your toes are, your ankle, the bottom part of your leg, and this part, the chora, is the equivalent of the calf, and this part is the equivalent of the thigh. So says the Chazanish, according to the Mishnah Berurah, who says that Shok Pisha Erva means the top part, namely the thigh, so then the parallel is really perfect. It just says you're not allowed to uncover the top part of your legs, you're not allowed to uncover the top part of your arm. Masha Einkein says the Chazanish, according to me, that I claim that you're not even allowed to uncover the bottom part of your leg, that the calf is considered to be the Makom Erva, that's called the Shok of the Gemara, so how come that the Shok of the leg is even the bottom part, and when it comes to the Zeroah, so the bottom part of the arm, is mutter. Says the Chazanish, maybe we should conclude that instead of including the kula, maybe we should include the chumrah. And just as I just got finished telling you that you're not allowed to expose your calf, so maybe you're not allowed to expose this part of your arm also. So says the Chazanish, are you talking that you have to wear mamish long sleeves, legame down to the wrist? Are you talking? Is that true? So says the Chazanish, lo shemana davazamir. Well, no, we can't ever say any rights. We don't find that even from shomri. Tzniyus of women, that they don't sometimes roll up their sleeves a little bit. So he says, we never heard that anyone should be machmir that. Maybe in some places they did hear about that, but the Chazanish writes that we don't find that that's the Minhag Yisrael. We find that the women do expose a little bit of their bottom part of their arms. So somehow we have this split. So the Chazanish says a little bit of a tzarchiyum, that one would have expected that the guidelines would have been the same for the arms as well as for the legs, but he doesn't back out from the Shita based on that. He just says, ma'ora, that according to the Mishnah Berurah, it's a little bit smoother. But according to Mishnah Berurah, when you're talking about the extremities of the body, so the lower parts are mutter, and the upper parts are also, according to the Chazanish, the lower parts of the arms are mutter, but the lower parts of the legs are also, I mean, it's not the kashi, no one's going to collapse on such a kashi, it's just the ha'ara that the Chazanish has against himself. So I'll call upon him, we have Shok, which appears in the Gemara, we have Zeroah, which doesn't appear in Angamar, but does appear in the Gemara in Sibis. The Mishnah Berurah just says, well, Zeroah Seha. He doesn't say. He doesn't define exactly what Zeroah is. It could be that it was self-explanatory. It could be that he realized that we would realize that Zeroah means the top of the arm. Because we know that from other, I mean, we know this is the Yad and this is the Zeroah.
Did anyone
mention the elbow? The Mishnah Berurah himself doesn't say any suffix about the knee, so we're not sure. Yeah, there are people say, you know, somebody could find someone that says it's also not clear exactly where exactly does Zeroah start. Does Zeroah begins above the elbow, does the elbow include it or not? One could raise such a self. So a couple of them, we have the two cases of the Gemara so far. We got Pepach Bisha, that was last week. We have Shok, and now we have the extension of Zeroah, even though it doesn't appear in that Gemara. Then we move on to the next case in the Gemara, and that's Seir Bisha. So the Gemara says that hair is considered to be a problem. So come to Shulchan Aruch in the 10th of the Ramakamos, in the Shulchan Aruch in Rechaim, it's Shimon Ayin Hesed Beis, and tells us, Seir Shal Isha Shedarka L'chasoso, also L'kros Kinegdo, Agraf Filu Ishto. So the Ramah just adds on that all of these halachas apply to one's wife also, that if one's wife's hair is not covered, so one is not permitted to say Kriya Shema in that place as well. But now comes the halach, comes the Mechab and the Ramah, and start to give you a whole bunch of possible kulas, a whole bunch of cases where this issur of saying Kriya Shema, saying Dvarim of Kedusha in front of a hair that's uncovered don't apply. So the first kula is, says the Shulchan Aruch, Babasulos, Shedark, and Lelach Puros, Arosh Mutter, that if a girl is not married, so then it's okay. So some people are thinking, well, that's a, talk about kulas, such kulas, who needs chumash? So the answer is that statement in and of itself is a tremendous chiddush, that an unmarried girl hair, that her hair is not considered to be a problem. Why is that considered to be a tremendous chiddush? Because the Rambam doesn't sound that way. The Rambam writes that the halacha is that, the Rambam writes that the derech is that women are supposed to cover the hair. The Rambam writes, bein besulos, the Rambam doesn't say besulos. The Rambam says, bein penuya, bein eshesh, the Rambam says. Both single girls have to cover the hair and married women have to cover the hair. That's the statement of the Rambam. So that statement of the Rambam is very, very difficult to understand at face value because it seems to be against the Mishnah. Because the Mishnah describes in Maseches Ksubos that the practice was that a chasana, whenever a basula was getting married, a girl was getting married for the first time, so Haisha Yotzev Rosh Parua, that she would go out with her hair dafka uncovered, and that was the whole Bedekin ceremony, part at least a little bit, some degree of the Bedekin ceremony. And the fact that the Gemara says in Ksubos, that was sometimes a way to remember whether the girl was getting married for the first time or not. This whole sugi at the beginning of the second paragraph of Ksubos, we know there's a difference. If a girl's getting married for the first time, the ksubas are certain amounts. If you're getting married for the second time, it's a different amount. Well, sometimes a couple could be married 20 years, and she can't find the ksuba. And now we're trying to figure out, was this the first marriage or a second marriage? Nobody remembers. So the Gemara says, well, let's ask some people who are at the wedding. We'll get their photographer, we'll get their videos, and go see. Did they do it bedekin or not? Was her hair uncovered at the time when she went to the chuppah or not? So if she was getting married for the second time, then it's understood her hair was covered, because even a woman who at one time was married has to cover her hair, but if the woman was never married, then her hair was uncovered. So they asked in the Rambam, we see the Farish in the Mishnah, that the Derech HaOlam was, nobody covered the young girls didn't cover their hair. So what does the Rambam mean when he says that Achas Pnuyas Yachas Eishizish? So there are two different approaches of what the Rambam says. So the standard approach is that the Rambam doesn't say Vesulos, the Rambam says Pnuyas, the Rambam says unmarried women have to cover their hair. That means women who at one time were married. It means if women were either an almana or a grusha, she's a widow, she's a divorcee, then she's b'chuyavas, then she's required to cover her hair. And if she was never married, then she's not b'chuyavas to cover her hair. That's the shul. Others say, the da'as ha-Rambam. That's exactly what the Rambam had in mind or not. That seems to be the generally accepted view, that a single girl is not obligated to cover her hair, and since she's not obligated to cover her hair, therefore there would be no issue in terms of kriyash. But that's what the Shulchan Aruch here is passing explicitly, and that's what our minhag, that's the pretty much the universal minhag, that nobody today, though there may have been some people at one time who followed the Rambam, nobody today really insists that the single girls have to cover the hair. We follow the simple reading of the Mishnah, like the Acharonim and Ibn Ezra, who say that the Rambam didn't mean, or even if he did mean it, we don't possibly think that Rambam, we assume that if the woman was never married, then there's no need to cover her hair. There is a Magen Avraham, and this sugya with the Magen Avraham says that he thinks the Rambam didn't mean to say that she has to mamish cover her hair, the single girls. He thought it means that they can't wear their hair wild. The Magen Avraham claims that for a married woman has to mamish cover her hair, and a single girl has to braid her hair. So the Magen Avraham writes that she has to keep her hair braided up in such a way that it's not just down the parua, just down the hefkevelt. That's the source of many Hasidic communities of such a custom that the young girls, so they don't stand grow long hair, means they keep the hair braided, or they keep the hair very, very, very in the sudar. That's based on that tradition of the Magen Avraham, that there is some degree of halach of, not quote-unquote covering the hair, but there is some halach of hair for single girls. But again, many of our communities don't follow that. We follow the simple reading of the other Echeronim, that the single girls were never married, this halach doesn't apply at all. So therefore, right, so where does that come from? Right, so why should there be such a chilek? So l'chora, this is a little bit different because the whole idea of the hair, that the hair has to be covered, this is in fact learned out from Pasuk Chumash. The Pasuk says, the Farash Esrasha Isha, which is referring to an Eish Zish, the Parash of Sota. So l'chora, here it may be the opposite. It means it starts out that there's a chiyav to be mechas of the hair. You're supposed to cover the hair, and since the hair is supposed to be covered, the male, if you see a woman, a married woman whose hair should be covered, and it's uncovered, so that's already, that's something that's striking. With a 15-year-old girl who's understood that she's not covering her hair, that the hair in and of itself is not necessarily something that is stimulating. So it may be the opposite of some of the things that we spoke about last week. So a kolpanim, the first quote-unquote cool that we have is that if it's a girl who the halacha doesn't require to cover her hair, then the din of creation and those types of things don't apply here. Just parenthetically, there was a big machlekas in the poskim, at what point exactly does the chiv of covering the hair kick in? If it applies to a married woman, it doesn't apply to a basula. So when does she make that transformation from being no longer basula and now being a married woman? Does that happen? Three choices. Does it happen at the time of Kiddushin? Does it happen at the time of the Nisuin? Or does it happen at the time of Bir Rishona when the couple is first together? Nafkamina, all the Nafkamina in the world. At what point does she have to start putting a shekel on? So according to the Machmirim, she has to put a shekel on before she goes to the chuppah, in effect, because it's going to be at the time of the Kiddushin. So how could she go to the chuppah? What? he's going to give her the ring, and then it's not seconds, he's going to whip the shekel and put it on, and it's not going to happen. So the machmirim hold that she has to put the shekel on before she goes to the chuppah because of that. So others have issue with that, because others say that's exactly what the Mishnah said not to do. The Mishnah says, Rosh for Rosh, she's supposed to go to the chuppah, not with a hair covering. So others who weren't so convinced you have to do that. So others say, right, you have to do the Nisuin. So what's called the Nisuin? So there are different opinions what the Nisuin is. So some say after the Yichadrum. It means she should switch, make the transformation from non-covered to being covered. In the Yichadrum, she should wear a sheitel for the second day of the wedding. And there are others who will say, no, that the din is only after the Rishon. And that the Ikra din is only after they actually go home together first time. Then and only then, like Pasha Sot only starts after they already were together. So that's the third opinion. So yesh v'yesh, different opinions. There are those who argue that even if the technical halacha of covering the hair may not start until after the Rishona, but minute Yisrael is that, let's say, after during the wedding, so the proper thing to do is that the woman should keep keep her headpiece on during the wedding, and then when she leaves the wedding, so she should put something on her head also. The minhag is that the women don't walk out of the, after the chasa, they don't walk home without something over their head, even though the ikra din may not start actually until the next morning. So I want to get back to the story. So the first clue that we have is that if she's was never married, then there's no problem at all. Then the Ramah tells you another clue. V'hu adin ha'sa'aro shal noshim shiregilin lotzeis mechutz v'tzamtzon. The Ramah says that there's another heter. So let's say you have a little bit of hair that is coming out. The hair is basically covered, but it's not a strand of hair over here, standing over here, a little bit's coming out. So that's also considered to be basically covered, and one would be permitted to say Kriya Shema in front of that. And the implication of the Ramah is there's nothing really wrong with that. It means that's okay. That's an acceptable way of covering your hair. Now we're saying the fact that a little bit of hair here and there, no pun intended, is coming out. So this becomes a very, very delicate, technical question. How much did the Ramah mean exactly when he says that she regilin lotzeis? She regilin lotzeis. You can have 10 feet, but she's regilin lotzeis. So what's considered to be regilin lotzeis? So this was a big machlokes poskim between Ramosh and others. So many, many poskim, it could be most of the poskim, wrote the opinion that this meant a strand over here, a strand over there. It's basically the hair. The goal is to cover the entire hair. Allah what? Yeah, but it's a little bit. It's like, well, here's the problem. Okay, shareis. So it's impossible unless the woman's wearing a sheitel. So we don't find your mechutz to wear a sheitel. We'll see in a minute whether you're even allowed to wear a sheitel. But so let's say in the olden days, before anyone dreamt up of wearing sheitel, so women covered the hair with other things. So other kind of assorted coverings. So it's a little bit of hair is not going to come out. So that's the sum of what the Ramon meant. A little bit here and there, mechutz tzimtzum, that's not considered to be a problem. So Rabbi Shah had a tremendous cool in this area, and they're... You read the Tshuva Ramosha, so from the Tshuva itself, you can't exactly tell whether Ramosha was saying this more to Limut Chus, means he held this was true, he held what he was saying is Emes. Ramosha didn't give Limut Chus, he didn't think it was true. He held this was Emes, is he advocating this is the way to go? So you can't necessarily tell from Ramosha. There are many who claim that Ramosha didn't mean this, that this is Lechachilus, Lechachila. Ramosha is just writing what he felt was the Iker Gradin. Ramosha the following clue, Ramosha claims, based on some of the things we spoke about last week about Tefach. Tefach plays a certain role in terms of Hilchos Erevos, and Rav Moshe claimed that Tefach plays a role in terms of the hair as well. And technically speaking, Rav Moshe argued that if a woman has a Tefach of a hair exposed, that's still okay. That's still considered to be basically covered. How exactly do you cheshbon out a Tefach? Going to Rav Moshe, so Rav Moshe writes that a Tefach means a Tefach squared. So how do you make the calculation? So Rav Moshe says an average person has about 2 Tefachim crossed from one end of the head to the other. Tefach according to Rav Moshe is 3.6 inches, so people are about, give or take, the size of a normal head is about 3 tefachim. So Rav Moshe said if you have 2 tefachim going this way, so it's a mess. So how much can it be protruding? How much can it be exposed this way? Half a tefach, right? So you have a tefach squared, so you can have half a tefach of hair that's exposed in the front. So how much, one's theory in the back, if you want to have it there, but let's say it's moving from the front for a minute. So Rav Moshe writes that if you have 2 etzvos, which is half a tefach, of hair protruding in the front, so that would be okay. Rav Moshe writes that mikra, then that would be all right. Again, did Rav Moshe mean that that's b'chatchila b'shalom b'chatchila? I don't know if Rav Moshe meant that, but the posting quote from other sources that the Zohar writes that a person should be careful not even to let even a mashu of hair be exposed. But Rav Moshe is writing what he felt was mamash mikra din, and if we write in the tshuva, then any woman who dressed in such a way So you can't say anything derogatory about it. You can't be mechilaza. A woman is covering her hair according to what the ikra din of covering the hair is, even though one may or may not advocate this. This is Rav Moshe's famous kula of a tefach. So then Rav Moshe doesn't talk about the other parts, so one could suggest that maybe just Rav Moshe was matzah a little bit in the front, so maybe he could be matzah a little bit in the back also. So if you have a little bit less than the depth on the front, a little less than the depth on the back, could be that would also be all right, according to Rav Moshe's. Maybe he does, maybe Taka doesn't, I don't remember anymore. Maybe he does mention both, but I don't think he's over the fact that they should be mitzvahs. I think that we assume that they're not mitzvahs. So according to this cool of Rav Moshe. Again, many folks have never heard of this story, but tefach, a lot of things we spoke about last week, so we said tefach doesn't really play a role all the time. Tefach is only in very, very limited areas. So it's chiddush number one to apply tefach, and that's Rav Moshe's chiddush. So many folks didn't accept Rav Moshe, but even Rav Moshe, it's not clear whether Rav Moshe really held that this was lechat chiddush, but chila probably not. Rav Moshe was writing the truth that one shouldn't look down. Rav Moshe writes one shouldn't be mezalzel on people who are covering their hair in such a way. He felt that since the ikra did, that would be all right. Of course, the implication of that is that even Rav Moshe was the Rosh HaMekilim, the biggest, no pun intended, the biggest maker of this shayla. Even Rav Moshe agreed that more than a tefach is out of the question. So this is, one has to be careful that, like Bas Paro, so her Amma became very, very big. One has to be careful that one's tefach doesn't mishtar revelios kama tefachim kama Ammas b'chayyot. So if one wants to follow Rav Moshe, I can't, Rav Moshe said you can't make light of it. So those who want to follow it, for better or for worse, but one should be careful that it doesn't become out of the realm of Rav Moshe's kula. Then there is a third kula that the Ramah quotes in the sugya in terms of the hair. The hair is not the end of the world. It's in kulas. One, if it's not married woman. Number two, if it's a little bit of hair, whatever you define a little bit of hair. And then the Ramah writes at the end of my Ramah, number 10, the kol shekein say anochmes if you'll darach alachasas, he says, kal v'chaymer, if it's here, it doesn't mean a non-Jew's hair. It means Sanochim is a shekel. It means a foreign hair. It means hair that's not your own personal hair. So that's for sure okay. The Ramah says that's not considered to be a problem. So this is the famous Ramah that everybody quotes. Ramah didn't make it up. He got it from a Shulta Gibayrim. Hagelos Al-Fasi is the synonym for Shulta Gibayrim. It's the comments on the side of the wrist. In Masechta Shabbos, so the Shulta Gibayrim is quoted by the Ramah says that shekels are permissible. That's not considered to be a violation, say, of Isha Erva. So not everybody agreed to the Shulta Gibayrim. There were Gedolei HaPosim who disagreed. So the Mishnah Berurah quotes. There were different customs about this in different communities in Europe. So basically, the Prima Gadol writes, depends on where you come from. If you come from those communities that Asa Shetels, you should follow that minute. So many Hungarian communities, they Asa Shetels, I despise them outright, they Asa Shetels. They never had this cool of Shetels. But in many of the Eastern European communities, many of us come from. So in Galicia, the women used to wear Shetels. In Lithuania, the women used to wear Shetels. So one has the right to be makel, so wearing a shetel is a kula. Some people say, yeah, wearing, I don't want to rely on this kula. Wearing a shetel, I won't cut my hair at all. But that's not the option. The option is you don't want to rely on the kula for shetel, you have to cut your hair in another way. So you have to cut your hair properly with some other contraption. But those who want to rely on the kula of the shetels, so definitely can rely on the Ramah, the Prima God, the Mandik, or the Minig Yisrael that existed in many, many Choshev communities. There is an important question that's raised by the Gedolei HaPoskim, which really boils down to Machlokes Mishibul and Yerach HaShulchan, about this issue in terms of Seir B'Isha Erva. How does this play out, this man hazeh? So the Mishnah Berurah comments in the 11th and the Ramakamos that V'da'od, the third line into the Mishnah Berurah, V'da'od, Yafilim Derech Isha Zuva Chavruseh Be'osamotam, which says even if this particular woman and other women in this place go Lelech B'Gili HaRosh B'Shuk, If they don't cover the hair at all, or not acceptable way, so says the Mishnah Berurah, Kedar Chaprutza, so we can leave that out, Chmol Inyan Gilishoka, Daz B'chol Gavne, says the Mishnah Berurah, the hair is an objective erva. He says it doesn't matter what the Minig HaMokom is, the Minig HaMokom today till tomorrow, says the Mishnah Berurah, the Yisra is B'mkoma Omeid, and therefore the halacha is that one would not be permitted to say Kriya Shema, the Mishnah Berurah is Marich upon this, and it's Lamal of Omeid, it's not going to help the fact that the minig HaMokom is in any particular location not to do this, the minig is wrong, says the Mishnah Berurah, and therefore one would be required to cover the hair under all circumstances, and therefore one cannot say Kriya Shema under all circumstances. So that particular nekuda, the Yerach HaShulchan takes issue with. So Yerach HaShulchan, if you skip down to Mar Mokom number 13, so the Yerach HaShulchan in Archaim and Simon Ayin Hayes is Zion, So the Aruch HaShulchan, this is an important Aruch HaShulchan both in terms of halacha and just in terms of historically, sociologically. You know, we sometimes think that all the problems in Klai Yisrael started in America. So it's not always, we don't bring multi laws or anything that was going on in Europe, but you have to be honest that there were some problems in Europe in certain places also. So the Aruch HaShulchan was not exactly living in the middle of Paris. The Aruch HaShulchan lived in Manoah. He was the Rav in the Vardak. Okay, Nevardik was where the Nevardik yeshiva was. He was the middle, right smack in the heart of the Muslim movement in the middle of Litta. And this is the Aruch HaShulchan, is the Rav of town, writing as follows. And this is not in 1940. The Aruch HaShulchan, this was written in the early 1900s. The Ata Bo in the Tzaveach, he says, let us scream out, Bo in the Tzaveach, or Pirtzos Dereinu, on the terrible Pirtzos that we've experiencing in our generation, by the Nisena Rabim. She says, Shonim Rabos. He says, we've been going on for years. It didn't happen yesterday. Not the turn of World War I. We've been going on for years, he writes. She says, Nifritzu b'nei shesra b'avin zeh v'holchus b'gili ha'rosh v'chol mashet tzakwa zeh lo le'ezeh v'lo le'hoyo. He says that we've been screaming, the Rabbah have been screaming about this for generations, the Gordish Galfin. V'ata posta ha'mishpachas. Now the scare, the spread, she has suas holchus b'saros and kamoa b'sulos. Oilana shall also be a menukach. He says, whoa, that this has happened. Now we get to the punchline for us. Miwa, koponim ludina, nira, shemutalana lispaal avarach neged rashen hamagulos. He says, lamaisa, am I allowed to say kriyishma? If the woman's hair is uncovered, bottom line, here is it, but it's my wife, somebody else's wife, bottom line, are you allowed to say kriyishma? He says, yes, you're allowed to make kiddish, you're allowed to bench, you're allowed to say kriyishma, you say divitara. Why? Sha'ata Ruben Holchoskach. He says, most people are walking around that way. V'havakim makom v'sam agulim v'gufa. Moshikosam Mordechai v'shem Rav Yah. Basically, everything that we said last week in terms of subjective erva, so comes Erech HaShulchan and tells us a tremendous chiddush. Vis-a-vis the isser of going v'magulis v'osh. So he says, that's an isser. He said, well, that's so that never changes. Liolim Hod. Chomokom v'chosman is an isser to go with hair uncovered. However, says Erech HaShulchan, that which the Gemara in Barachas equates the uncovered hair with an erva vis-a-vis kriyashma, that's subjective. That's quite a chiddush, right? A lumbish, a rahul, that's a litmish, that's a brisk of art. That vis-a-vis the iser, it doesn't change, but vis-a-vis the kriyashma, it's only based on hiror, and since the hiror doesn't apply to Bizman Azeh, because we see it all the time, nobody gets excited to hear anymore, so says the Aruch HaShulchan, so therefore the iser of kriyashma doesn't apply. In one fell swoop, the Aruch HaShulchan just knocked out this whole din of kriyashma, the v'tayr, and d'chsamaz, and everything in front of a married woman's uncovered hair, doesn't apply to chlal. That's what the Aruch HaShulchan writes. Now, there are some people who somehow like to read with one eye closed, so they quote this half this Aruch HaShulchan, and they just assume that the Aruch HaShulchan is just saying is that, well, since everyone's doing it, therefore it's mutter b'zman hazeh not to cover your hair. So anyone who is intellectually honest realizes that he just gave you a five-line introduction of Bo Netzavech, Pirtzos Dereinu v'Maseira. It doesn't sound like he's saying that it's mutter. So I don't know, unless you somehow cut out the first four lines of the piece, so it's obvious from the context of the Aruch HaShulchan that he was never in a million years was mafted to do it. He's just mafted to say Kriyashma Bizman Hazeh. That's a bikula. It's such a bikula that Mishnah Berurah didn't even buy into that kula. Mishnah Berurah held even that was not right. Mishnah Berurah held it's objective, end of discussion, and doesn't matter no matter what. So this is a major machlokes supposed. This is already serious stuff. Machlokes Mishnah Berurah, Aruch HaShulchan, the two gedolei yoyim of Europe are fighting out this shy aloch lemaisha. A person finds themselves in a situation where the married woman's hair is uncovered. Can you say Kriyashma? Can you say Tfilah? Can you bench? Can you say Kiddush? Or not? So according to the Mishnah Berurah, no. According to the Aruch HaShulchan, yes. But even the Mishnah Berurah, the biggest machmir in this sugya, so if you take a look at the Mishnah Berurah in 12, Maromokum 12, says the Mishnah Berurah, and remember last week we mentioned that under certain circumstances closing one's eyes may help. Says the Mishnah Berurah on this, Hani b'zatzim b'senayim v'chem b'ser isha b'vur b'sefbeis. The Mishnah Berurah is making outright that closing your eyes, that this helps. We say closing your eyes, the chazish, this doesn't mean literally to close. You can look down, look away. That's also called closing your eyes. So it comes out that even the Mishnah Berurah, who's the biggest ma'achmer, who says that the Isser is still b'mekayim ha'ayim, you're not allowed to say kriyashma or tefillah or brachas or anything in the presence of a woman whose hair is uncovered b'zman hazeh, the Isser doesn't change b'chlal. Mishnah Berurah concedes that if you close your eyes, that's okay. So that's also a kula. There are some who don't even accept that. There are some who say, no, hair is an objective erva, and it's erva mamish, and it's mohammed, and then tepafish erva, and even closing your eyes isn't going to help. There are big rabbanim hold that way, but we're going to be making on that. So I think those who want to follow the Mishnah Berurah right to do so. Those who find themselves stuck when they follow the Aruch HaShulchan, also, but those who don't want to rely on the Aruch HaShulchan, and they don't want to actually have their eyes open and looking at the time they're saying a bracha, so if they close their eyes and look away, look to the side, that would be okay. Yeah, so I guess in the Vardak that was the only pircha. In the Vardak they weren't walking around with other things exposed yet. You wonder, what would the Archa Shulchan say in 2007? I don't know. I'm not sure. That's a good question. I don't know. I remember once in the yeshiva, so there was a visiting gadol after the awful thing that the visiting gadol was, that he was presented a shiur on the Beis Medrash. And the family that was sponsoring the Beis Medrash was all full of men, and the family that was sponsoring that particular girl to come, so they brought the family in for it, and some of the women of the family were sitting there, they were sitting in the front row. So this particular Rav, this mother from the Gedalia, his daughter, was giving the shiur, he starts to give the shiur, and then he realizes that some of the women were sitting in the front. I don't think they were dressed so inappropriately, some of them, just the hair wasn't covered, so it wasn't covered to his liking. So he continued the shiur like this. So I don't think they chaped, I don't think anybody, because he wasn't even making for the Shabura. It means he was holding, like, remember last week, that the folks didn't say that by Erev and Mamish, so you have to Mamish turn your whole body away, that you shouldn't be like a Rishuk of the Hatzma. So that was, the Yeshiva guys all chaped, and I don't think anyone else understood what was flying. I guess good for everybody's well-being. Anyway, the very last part of the sugya, just as given instructions tonight that I shouldn't leave out anything. They told me that I should finish to the end, even if it takes the whole night. So I guarantee you, at 12 o'clock, I don't want to listen to other things, so we'll get home by then, but we'll be done soon. So let's just finish in the 14th of the Mamakom with the last group of things that we spoke about. I'm just kidding with what I said before. In the 14th of the Mamakom, so the Shulchan Aruch speaks about the very last of the Isurim of Erva, and that was called the Isha Erva. So the Shulchan Aruch says in Siman Ayin Hei, Siv Gimel, Yesh Lizar B'Shmias Kol Zemet Isha B'Shas Kriyashma. One should be careful not to hear Kol Isha when he's saying Kriya Shema. Already the post can point out that that's a very, very strange lesson. Yesh Lizoyer. It's a nice thing you should try to be careful about, but it's not so bad. So they point out, yeah, that it could be that Kol Isha may be the least of the problems in terms of this list of arayos for Kriya Shema. It could be because the whole list is Lo Yira B'char V'Zdav V'Yisr Z'Iyah. And when I'm listening to Kol Isha, I'm not even seeing anything. I'm listening. So maybe one could argue that Kol Isha may not even be included in this. So that's why maybe the Shulchan Aruch left it a little bit vague. He says, Eish Lizoyah. But I call upon him, L'chadchim for sure, one is supposed to be careful. Afilu B'Ishtay, Abakol HaRadalbo, in Erba, which is a question, what exactly that means, Kol HaRadalbo. Some will say that means that a woman is speaking, not singing. Others will say that it may mean even singing, if it's like a close relative of somebody, someone you really always hear singing. That's a question we'll talk about in a moment. But a couple of the basic din of Kol Isha applies for the purpose of Kriya Shema. Shulchan Aruch does quote it for Kriya Shema, and it applies out of the realm of Kriya Shema as well. It's quoted Laloch and Evan Ezer that one is not permitted to listen to a woman singing, since it's considered to be an erva. The Gemara singles it out as an erva, whether they're Isa, they're Abonin, whatever, that's a technical question. But just as one is not permitted to look at any other Mokom erva, one is not permitted to hear a woman singing. And then it goes without saying that just as a woman has to dress in a tzanua fashion, not to expose any part of her body that's in makom erva, so she would not be permitted to sing in the presence of men as well. So this is a clear halacha both in Aruch Chaim as well as in Ibn Ezra that Kol Isha is an absolute problem. The question is, what exactly is considered to be Kol Isha? What exactly falls under this category of Kol Isha? The Mishnah Berurah in the 15th of the Maamar Kamos, we're not going to go through this. Those who want to take a look at themselves. But the Mishnah Berurah basically knocks everybody out of the box. There's any woman who, whether she's a Penuya, whether she's a Shanish, even if she's a Penuya, but the Mishnah Berurah says a Nida already, unless the Mishnah Berurah says she's so young, she's a little girl who's not yet a Nida, so then you could assume it's okay. So at what age you have to be choshesh to? So that's always the machlokes mekam. So what age you have to be concerned? But a young girl, so technically speaking, wouldn't be a problem of would not be a problem of Kol Isha. But normally Kol Isha would be a problem. So there are a few important machlokes in the later poskim that you don't find as machlokes in the Rishon and the Shulchan Aruch. You find in much much later poskim. Some of the guidelines, perhaps, what is included in Kol Isha, what's not included in Kol Isha, both for the purposes of Kriya Shema, Tefillah, etc., as well as for the more global issue in terms of the actual listening to the Kol Isha. So there is a Achlokes HaPoskim. There was one opinion, the Poskim, that maintained that the issue of Kol Isha perhaps only applies to more provocative types of songs, but maybe If you have like Shira Kodesh, you have a woman singing some beautiful Shiras with Tishbachas and Rabban Shalom, maybe that's not called Talisha. There was such a suggestion that was given, and many questioned that they didn't think that that was correct, that we don't have, find these arbitrary distinctions in Chazal, so we can't just make up these distinctions. That was one machlekes. Then there was another machlekes that posed to him about what if you have multiple voices, is that called Talisha? So some wanted to invoke the Gemara Rosh Hashanah and Megillah, take Kol HaMishtameh, like you can't have two Balkaris at the same time. So maybe you can't really discern any given voice, and others say, nah, come on, Talisha, Trikola, Mishtame, that's not in all areas of Allah, it's only sometimes, so we don't necessarily have a right to be naked like that. So these, both of these kulas were shaky kulas, the kula of Shirei Kodesh and the kula of Trikola, Mishtame. Each kula in and of itself was not the greatest of kulas, but there were some places that were some rabbanim were willing to be made based on a combination of these factors when they felt there was a big tzarech. It's the famous tshuva of the Sridei Eish. The Sridei Eish was asked years ago, sometimes for the purpose of Kirov. They felt, some people who were involved in Kirov felt that it was necessary to have girls singing, even though there were boys around. So the shayla was presented to the Sridei Eish. Are there any grounds to be made? So he goes through some of the kulas, and he says that sometimes you have a big shas of chak, like if the people who are involved in these organizations really honestly feel that there's a tremendous tawelas in having the girl sing, so maybe one can be made. Some of these factors, maybe there are grounds to be made. So this has become that shuvah sedation has been quoted and misquoted and unquoted and out of text quoted, whatever. But that's basically, he was the one who quoted some of the earlier posts him. But some of these coolers, again, these coolers should be under very, very limited circumstances. That the conventional approach was that many of these things don't necessarily apply. There was a further shayla, which of course you're not going to find in the Rishon and the Shulchan Aruch, but the shayla was about tapes. Is that considered to be a problem of Kalisha? So there are basically three different approaches to this problem. So there are some who maintain that, yeah, it's also that Kalisha applies, whether it's a live voice, a tape voice, everything, it's all the same. Everything is also, it's the same here, or it's the same problem, and everything is off limits. And then there are others who quote the Gemara Masech HaSotah that says that Ein Yetzar Sholeh Masha Ein of Sholtos, that if a person can't see, doesn't know what the woman looks like, so there's not going to be any Yetzar. He's going to hear a nice voice, so he doesn't know who's singing, so that's not considered to be that won't bring on hero, that's not considered to be like error, but that's nothing. So there were some who wanted to argue that you can hear a voice on a tape, provided that you never saw don't know who the woman is singing, you never saw her face, you don't know what she looks like, so there are grounds perhaps to be made on that. And then there are others who wanted to argue that even more than that, that even if you know who she is, even if you look at her, like you're watching on whatever video, whatever you're watching, you see her, but it's not a call. That's we give you to the Megillah on a tape, so that's not called a call. It's not called a call. It's not called a call. Ain't on the Chadish, Gezeiros Miatz Meinus. There are different opinions in the Gedolei Poskim. Where do you draw the line? What's considered to be a violation of Kalisha based on all this? I remember one time I was in Eretz Yisrael, and this can only happen in Eretz Yisrael. One of the most beautiful things about Eretz Yisrael is all the wild things, that these kinds of stories that happen there all the time. So I went in to get a haircut, and the barber was a Sephardi barber, and he's giving haircuts, and the yeshiva bachar walks in, and the Sephardi was listening to some music, and there was some female singer, so the yeshiva bachar walks in, and he hears the music, and he walks right out. So the barber screams at him, "Hey, put on it! Where are you going?" So the guy screams, that the yeshiva bacha screams out, "Kalisha, it's awesome!" So the barber's running him out of the store with a scissors in hand. He says, "I thought I'd have a vadya mikel, have a vadya mikel, have a vadya mikel." That's what's going on. That's the Ashrecha Yisrael. That's the fighting about in the streets of Yerushalayim over this cooler Rabbi Vadya was making back and forth about the shadow. So one should really have to be, try to be very, very careful about these things. All kinds of entertainment and all kinds of things, live entertainment, so for sure one has to be very careful not to put themselves into these situations of Kalisha. Mr. Brewer quotes that if a person finds themselves in a stuck in a situation where they're kind of stuck, they can't move, and they hear a voice of a woman singing, so what are you going to do? So Mr. Brewer says, so you just, you may see a das, you try not to pay attention, what are you going to do? A person has to be smart, so chacham in a barosh, not to put yourself into such a situation. So I have, we'll conclude with this particular interesting story that happened with us. So I'll remember this from almost 2 years ago. So it was the summer that Moreh Shas started late because of a rainstorm or something. So we had to keep my kids occupied for another week to do nothing between school and camp. So we raised barriers, so we took them to Shea Stadium. So I figured, okay, that's part of a neutral. You know, it was it was senior citizens day, right? That's why, right? And two reasons. Number one, you get cheap tickets when the senior citizen pays. And number two, I figured what kind of crowd's going to come out of senior citizens. I mean, there's a limit to how rowdy the crowd's going to be. 2 or 2 o'clock in the afternoon, senior citizens day. Some of those people, some of those 80-year-olds, they were going strong. But Shanks, I figured this is pretty neutral entertainment. There aren't that many forms of neutral entertainment these days. So good. So we come in. So I hadn't been at a Met game in many, 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 many years. So the first thing that happens is the national anthem. So a woman gets up on the field. I can't say I didn't know what she looked like. I'm saying we had good tickets. I see. I saw exactly what she looked like. The woman's getting up and singing the national anthem. She goes, oh my goodness. I think to myself, so if it would be like some other kind of a setup, I would have walked right out. He said for me to go out in the middle of the national anthem. I said, oh, Hashem, go to me. It's not right. I think I'm part of Al-Qaeda or something. So he can't walk out in the national anthem. So I figured, okay, lay's brave. I'll stand there like this. I figured, it's also shtickle, big chil Hashem. I don't want to hear the national anthem. So what are you going to do? So chil Hashem is a deraisa. Kalisha is maybe deraisa, but I'm not sure. So I invoke this Mishnah Berurah. So Mishnah Berurah says in the Messiah Das, so if you're in a place where your mamish can't move, you can't move. So you just don't pay attention to the national anthem. So my daughter turns around and says, Abba, what are you doing here? There's a woman singing. You're not allowed to be here. I said, you're right. I said, there's Mishnah Berurah in Siman Ayin Hey. He said, go and see a Zion. It says, when you stop. So I said, I'm not paying attention to this room. Oh, okay. So anyway, so maybe you haven't once to try. I learned from there that next time we go, I'm going to have to go for the plan to get there by the second inning. That's the chaf. New chumra in terms of other kalish. Anyway, so hopefully we try to give a little bit of an overview of some of these topics. Again, as in all areas of halacha, one has to try to be mevara what the ikra halacha is, what's the din, and then one has to take the words of the Ramban to heart, to the kedushin to you. And one has to know what sometimes certain things may be mamish mutter according to some shitas. One has to be careful that one doesn't violate the spirit of halacha as well in terms of kedushin of halacha. Thank you.